Blog Talk Radio.
I thank it for me. Yes, I am. Bring bang dana de, dang dana de. Take it. A revolution. Yeah. I'm on fight for revolution. Bring dang dana de, dang dana de. A revolution. Yeah. Rasta fight up my revolution.
Down from out and them a make big speech, but poor people the food not reach.
I'm enough to wonder how them really sleep.
Them living in the pool while the poor are feeling heat. Red country,
why it's
red country,
why?
In the ghetto part of town you ain't nothing but a victim.
We're just trapped in a political system. There ain't no one to tell it alone. If you hit the big man a gunshot, them broke your bone with stone.
Why?
So a revolution, yeah. I'm on site a revolution coming in a Babylon land, yeah. A revolution, yeah. A hot a revolution.
Government, what is your aim? Where is the plan? Where is the future for the younger generation?
If there's no light at the end of the tunnel,
well, come here, so I go red like hell.
For man, the peas are cooked, but the rice can't swell.
So no more big speech. Time to come action. Crime and the violence rampant in our nation.
People say it's because of separation. There's got to be a revolution, yeah. What a hot revolution, wriggling in a Babylon, yeah. A revolution, yeah. Guns, knives and cutlass revolution.
Dang da da dang, dang da da dang.
All you false leaders, I brand you as traitors. Nothing but poor mongers, idol worshippers, them a sorcerers.
Yo, you better come down off of your pumpkin pride. Stop taking poor people for a joyride.
Cause all you teach is to divide and rule, and I use the people then with your political tool. Just fool.
Sure.
Cause a revolution, yeah. The poor boy to see the revolution.
Ring dang da da ding, dang da da ding.
A revolution, yeah. What a hot a revolution.
Ding da dang da dang da dang.
No
matter how them a come out and a kidnap them teeth, yet the poor man the food not reach.
Tell them all to practice what they preach. Cause I don't want to see them all a paging preach. Whoa, cause a revolution, yeah. I'm on site a revolution. Ring dang da da dang da da. A revolution.
Greetings, welcome to the Chef Rob Show. I'm your host, Chef Rob, here at Blog Talk Radio. Got my buddy on the line, Covina Man. Today's show is basically asking a simple question. I get some difficult answers, strange responses. But today I want to know, what is a proud black American? How can you be proud of this whole situation here? The history of this country is flawed and skewed and got a whole lot of problems. At what point in U.S. history can you really say you are proud to be a black American? With America's past history of human atrocities and human rights violations, what can you truly say you're proud of? Now, this land was pretty much invaded. The history is distorted and flawed, things taken away and lies put in. Now, this country came to be was by its violent means from these invaders from Europe. These invaders massacred the inhabitants of this land. And some would go ahead and say, well, black people were here already, but it was the enslavement of blacks, science experiments on blacks, sterilization of women and men, bombing of innocent children, churches, lynchings, Jim Crow, the new Jim Crow, the lack of businesses, limited education, incarceration, racial profiling, COINTELPRO, drugs, self-hatred, skin bleaching, hair weaves, the list is long, it goes on and on. Please tell me what a black person has to be proud of in America. Brother, come here, man, you there?
Yeah, I'm here, brother, can you hear me?
I got you, brother, I got you.
Oh, okay.
What can you be proud of about me? Let me back up. How was your week, brother?
My week was productive, man. I had a good week. How about you?
Somewhat productive. I had a few things good, a couple of setbacks, you know, a couple of disappointments. It's life, but you got to keep on pushing.
Yeah.
Being black in America, you know, we can't give up. And, you know, we got to keep it on, pretty much, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, my week was the usual. You know, I work with the youth, so I keep the youth out of trouble as much as I can, keep them busy on positive things. So, you know, that's how I usually spend my week.
You ever think about asking them that question? Because, you know, in school they got to get you to pledge allegiance and all that other stuff, and, you know, to show you to go ahead and brainwash you, so to speak. Now, hey, look, be a proud American. You can't be no proud black American, or can you?
You know what? It's not as simple as, you know, for white folks, you can be proud of, you know, various things. I think that it's a tricky question for black people because, you know, are you really not going to be proud of the country and the treatment? Are you going to have any kind of pride? I don't know how you would call it any other way of what black folks have been able to overcome and you know, still try to live on two feet. You know, we overcame a lot and we still, you know, trying to get it and not giving up. So it's like, I want to be proud of all the people who didn't give up. The people who sometimes they had to do what they had to do to survive slavery and Jim Crow or whatever. And we're still here despite all the opposition. So I want to be, you know, thankful for the people who didn't give up.
Oh yeah. I always play my motivational speaker. Well, you know, I'm gonna have to play that later on, but I don't do it so early, man. But I just go ahead and look at all that, man, and I just don't understand how we got so many black people willing to go ahead and support things that are hurting them or aiding in our own destruction. You know, we don't have a lot of things in place. And when some brothers try to go ahead and put some things in place, the first ones going to shoot you down is pretty much your family and then a whole lot of other people that look like you. And that's just mind-boggling to me. I mean, and they don't have an idea or some, you know, something to put in its place. You know, I can tell the young man, hey, look, don't sell drugs, but then what else am I going to put in its place to go ahead so he can support himself? So, you know, we kind of stuck in a sense, but, you know, we have to keep on trying to develop a plan or I think the biggest thing is go ahead and dust off them old plans that brothers and sisters have put in place before us and put those plans into motion, but with a modern-day twist. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. That's what we have to do. It's just that, you know, in today's society, it's like I like to, you know, look at things from whatever perspective we're working in now, and maybe some of the plans that was implemented or created might have to trim a few here and add a few there. But, you know, we could get it right in you know, 2013, 2014 coming up. I mean, the time to move is now, man, because, you know, like people have said in previous shows, some of this stuff is getting ready to be shut down. It's going to be some, I mean, they're talking about shutting down the government and how many black people depending on government on one level or another. The time is now. It's critical. It's past due, you know. So it's time to move. And I don't know, really, I can't put my hand on what is taking people so long to get it together and let's go.
Yeah, you know, me neither, you know, I don't either, man. And that's why I'm stuck, because you got so many people. And you got so many people that are trying to do stuff, but it seems like we don't. We lack some structure, some organization, but I think we have that. But we got so many things that's going ahead and affecting the message, okay, and putting in a little virus and going ahead and shutting it down, you know, just going ahead and putting in that virus and it grows like a cancer and just rips the message apart. Because when you look at what Marcus Garvey did when he gave people these I think it was a stock receipt. You know, they bought into, they gave a dollar or two, whatever, and he gave them a receipt for, hey, look, you know, this new land, this is going to be part of yours. And that thing there, man, you know, because I know bits and pieces about it. I'm at the point where now I got a little bit from everybody, and I'm like, okay, well, let's do something. So if you can elaborate a little bit more on that, because I had my buddy, I wanted him to come on and explain it a little bit more, because a lot of people don't know some of the stuff that Marcus Garvey did.
Yeah. Let me elaborate on, you know, how I think that we need to really focus and get this done. And it's as simple organizing, and it would include as many people as want to include. You know, like we were doing in the previous show, with the Black Brotherhood Self-Determination, where we just had brothers on here, you know, coming up with solutions and trying to figure it out. And I think basically you have to have like an outline in how a discussion. We're going to get together brothers who, okay, we're going to sit down and we're going to focus on building. And then we have to outline in our conversations what it is we're talking about, some kind of structure to our conversation, so all the conversation becomes productive rather than just, let's just throw out a gripe that we have here, or the gripe we have there. But sit down and actually come up with a structure of how do we create this conversation so that at the end of it, at the end of the conversation, we would establish what everybody's roles are and what everybody's goals are. And I'm not talking about roles like hierarchy or somebody's a minion. No, I'm just talking about roles as there's things that people need to do. If you look at it as, you know, a potluck, if you think of like a potluck people have, and they don't just put up the thing that says we'll have a potluck next week. And that's it. There's more information. You need to know where the potluck is. You need to know when it is. You need to know what everybody else is bringing. You need to know how many people is coming, so you don't have too much food or too little food. So it's like just basic information. If you know what it is you're trying to organize, you want to have an approach to, you know, fill in the blank so people know what it is they're doing, be productive. So basically we should need to have conversation regarding simply who, what, when, where, how and why. The why should be pretty obvious. We know why we got to get things done. But those other ones are things that we actually need to sit down and see who is serious about nation building or about self-determination or building or whatever it is we're going to do. Who is serious? Who is and who's not? Who's included? Who's not included? We need to sit down and just have a conversation just on that. And then go to the next one. What is it we're trying to do? What is it we're trying to do? What not are we trying to do? You gotta hammer that out. We can't just have people going out there willy-nilly. We gotta know exactly what it is we're doing and what it is we're not going to do. Hammer that out. When? When are we going to do this? When or not we going to do? Are we going to, is people plan on, we're going to go to Africa or we're going to do something? You gotta know, well, when is this? When are we going to get together and do this? And make establishment, so on and so forth. Where are we going to do it? Are we going to do it in Chicago? Are we going to do it in L.A.? Are we going to do it in Africa? Are we going to do it in Jamaica? We got to know where. And where not. Is it the right place over here in Chicago or the right place over here? Stuff like that has to be determined where and have serious conversation. Be productive. How are we going to do this? We're going to raise money? Are we going to, willy-nilly, just everybody contribute to a pot? Is everybody going to have their own individual money? Is money even relevant? So, and how we're not going to do it. Are we not going to do it? So those things have to be, we have to sit down with a group of brothers and figure this out conversation by conversation. And once we have an outline of what it is we're doing, then we can say, okay, brothers and sisters out here, this is what we figure out, who we're going to do it, who's not, what, when, how, and why, and this is what we're going to do. And when we have those serious conversations, it should be very clear what role is and what the goals are. And so, brothers, come to the table. Everybody don't have, like in a potluck, everybody's not bringing chicken. Everybody's not bringing drinks, right? You know exactly what it is you're contributing. And what you don't have to worry about because somebody else got that. So, you know, that's the kind of serious, productive conversations that brothers need to have. And when we get that kind of conversation, get that kind of organized, get it on paper, get everybody have a copy of it, they know exactly what they're doing, then we're ready to start working on it. And until the conversations just get willy-nilly, where people have dreams and aspirations, but no focus. We got to get focused. Time is running out.
Yeah, you know, because then also the time frame, timelines, those are very important. You know, say, look, we want to accomplish this by this date. We want to accomplish this by that by this date. You know, and I think that's also missing, too, with a lot of people's conversation.
Yeah.
And I don't see something really big on that. You know, I don't see where people are going ahead and having that focus. Hey, look, we need to do such and such, have such and such, you know, set up by, you know, by July, by December, by blah blah, and that's what makes me think some people are just talking in circles and they enjoy talking in circles.
Yeah, I think for some people it could be the individual fundraiser, it could be the way of they getting, you know, some leg on the weekend or something. Some people just organize for the sake of organizing, and when you're serious, you can tell, oh, this other person is not very serious. They're doing it for some other reason. And you can either decide, I'm going to continue to work with these people or I'm not. So I think a lot of times when you start to work with people and you see what their motives are, you kind of go, okay, let me put this on hold with these people until, you know, something else comes along. So it's the things that we have to do. It seems like we're not focused enough. We got the energy or we got the emotion. We're angry and we want to do something, but we really got to sit down and break it down. What exactly are we doing? When, where, and how? You know, those things got to be worked out.
But one key, man, is getting angry. I mean, I think that's something that we need to. I mean, I think that's a good thing. Getting angry to go ahead and say,
oh, yeah,
do something about your situation. Because that's the biggest way to bring change. Hey, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. I'm tired of you having your foot on my neck. I'm tired of this happening. I'm sick of this. And I don't want to do this no more. I see something better we can do. So I think getting angry is a real good thing. I really think that anger, and then you have to go ahead, we have to figure out, you know, what's good on how to channel that anger, because you can't just be getting angry just to be angry.
Exactly. I mean, that's how I work with the youth, man. Like I said before, and we talk about that all the time. Anger is a natural emotion. You need anger at times. It gets you motivated to set the boundaries that you need to set. It gets you motivated to change some things. But you got to know how to channel that. You can't just be angry and break something. You got to be angry and create something.
Another thing, you know, like I said, man, what is a proud Black American? I really wanted a few other people to go ahead and call in. They said they would. They said they'd stop by because I hear these individuals go ahead and say, I'm proud to be an American. I love America. But they never went nowhere else. They ain't never seen nothing else. I mean, so what do you got to put that up? You proud and you love this. What do you got that to put that up against? You know, it's the same thing. If I'm hitting you in the head with a stick every damn day, it's like, oh, well, fuck, I love getting them lumps on my head. Because maybe you don't know what it's like to go ahead and not walk around with a fucking headache and no lumps on your head. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. I think a lot of
people,
they
just love this, but they don't see no opposition. And when people try to put things in front of them to go ahead and say, hey, look, this is how life is on another side. Oh, man, Black folks are real. Especially Black Americans, they real quick to go ahead and put them shields up and protect. Yeah, I have to say it, protect their slave master, because it is kind of a slave mentality. You don't want to rise up and fight the situation, so you just keep on taking, because you know that's all you know. That's all your daddy knew. That's all your grandfather knew. That's all they know. They teach you how to go ahead and blend in, so to speak. Well, shit, I ain't been exposed to some other stuff, and I know that this shit ain't right. Go ahead, bro.
Go ahead. I was going to say, in some way, what that feeling is, or what that expression that Black folks have, is a form of tribalism. It's not tribalism, not in a negative way. I'm just generically saying, like, tribalism. It's like this. It's like if one person is from L.A. and another person is from San Francisco, both in California, right? All of a sudden, the L.A. people is like, yeah, L.A. is better than San Francisco. San Francisco is better than L.A. So when these teams play, or these, you know, the Dodgers play the Giants, people get very emotional about their team. It's not actually their team. They don't own nothing of it. It's just they in L.A. and they think that's their team, and people in San Francisco think that is. Some of that is natural tribalism. I think that it's like when people grew up in a tribe wherever on the planet. If you were in Nigeria and you spoke one language and somebody else was in Nigeria and they spoke another language, you develop a tribalism. You think that your tribe is worth fighting and dying for. It's just natural. So it's something we have to unprogram to get people to realize that parts of the American structure is really not your tribe. But because we live here, we're going to say, well, America compared to Canada, oh, I'm going to go with America. America compared to England, I'm going to go with America. So that's just natural tribalism, nativism, that's just naturally ingrained probably somewhere in our genetic makeup that we don't even not aware of. We're just naturally home turf biased.
You know, But here's another side of that. You know, but in America, there's almost no reason for no benefits for Blacks to be tribal.
Yeah.
You ain't getting nothing out of it. You know, you love a sports team, but hey, look, they ain't coming back to go ahead and help you. You love the city that you grew up in, but hey, look, you know, you can go ahead and look at a whole lot of eels within that city. But versus going ahead and different individuals who've been tribal. So, like, in Africa, that would be a little bit different because they were fighting over land, the language, some certain other atrocities. Over here, we fighting over here just to be fighting.
Yeah.
fighting just to be fighting, and that is more confusing to me. Just fighting just to be fighting, and I was with someone yesterday, and a young man approached me and this guy. We were talking, and he was talking about, hey, look, don't wear them colors because I was so and so and so and so. And I can't fathom that, man. You want to go ahead and fight over these colors. First off, you didn't make the clothes. Your family didn't make the clothes. You didn't get the dyes. You didn't go ahead and grow the cotton to go ahead and you didn't manufacture the clothes. So, you know, you fight over what? You know, it seems like it's getting worse. So, something, you know, you work with the youth.
Yeah.
I'd like to get a lot more feedback from about the youth you work with, and what is their emotion, or what do they feel about being that proud American?
You know what? The youth that I work with, I can't really say that the black people would say that they're proud American. I if it was like the Olympic type thing, they would be, but I work with a lot of, you know, black and Hispanic youth, and I wouldn't say that they're proud to be American. It really doesn't even come up, and I think that their lives are so stressful that they wouldn't even be able to contextualize that. They would focus on, you know, racial identification. I think it, when, you know, teenagers are around probably 13, 14, there's a lot of focus on racial identity, national identity. So that a lot of times Hispanic people were, you know, consider themselves Chicano or Mexican, and the blacks consider themselves black, you know. And there's a really, like, they get defensive on racial stuff. And I don't think that, at least the ones that I work with, they're not, you know, probably not the normal, typical teenagers. I work in a place where, you know, kids are out of home placements. And, you know, those kids, man, they got so much stuff going on that, you know, I probably might, maybe one out of 20 of them would say, yeah, I'm, you know, proud American, or I want to join the army or something like that. Yeah, these people are like, they're, you know, they're dealing with stuff.
See, but if it's racial, that means they are proud to be black, but they just ain't got through that American part on there yet.
Yeah.
Okay, so they will go ahead and fight for their race. What the person almost looks like, and they go ahead and fight to go ahead and defend that. But it gets even more tricky than that when you got, you know, when you're dealing with Hispanics, when you got black Hispanics. I've seen that. Did you see that article about the girl, she's won the beauty pageant. And,
the Indian? Was it the one from India? Or the Indian one?
Oh, the little girl won a Hispanic beauty pageant. And she's supposed to be a Dominican. But they never did.
Oh, wow.
And she was black Hispanic. And, yeah, and so... So the thing was about that was, hey, look, she didn't produce a birth certificate, blah, 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 blah. So, but I was looking into the article, and like her family spoke Spanish, and, you know, they said her grandmother and stuff, and grandmother was, grandparents came from, you know, both her parents, I think their people came from the Dominican Republic. But because they didn't produce her birth certificate, they disqualified her and took a crown.
Oh, wow. I didn't hear about that.
And it was, and the one of the issues was, hey, look, if she was lighter skinned, you wouldn't have questioned it. But then there was another girl who had blonde hair and white skin. She didn't have to go ahead and produce that same documents, but the black one did.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing in America, man. I mean, it's another one of them issues where, hey, look, you go ahead and be like, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah.
It's not all cracked up what they say it is. There's some issues here. some interesting.
Yeah, man, I'm gonna look that one up. Go ahead.
Yeah. One of the things I wanted to go ahead and mention was the, like I said earlier, the violent means of how America was invaded and taken over, like the inhabitants that were here first. You know, there's a lot of evidence to show that, hey, look, those Indian tribes were not Indians at all. They were, a lot of them were from Africa. And it was pretty much a thing to come in and wipe them out. From what the stuff that I gathered was that a lot of these, they want to call them primitive. I mean, I don't like that term because a lot of times they refer to us. But it was a thing where, hey, look, when I looked up at how Africans live and opposed to how the Indians live, they were pretty much taking care of the land, you know, and they were, there were some conflicts, but not like when the Europeans came on the scene. The Europeans came in, well, like everything belonged to them type deal. Conquer, to crush, destroy, lie, manipulate. But when the Europeans got over here after going here and encountered blacks in Africa and they saw these dark-skinned Indians, these black Indians, they were quick to wipe them out. And I don't think a lot of people recognize that, you know, that it was systematic on how they went to wipe all these people out. And like I said, and how can you be a proud black American knowing the history of this country and knowing it's just built on violence and murder and lies and mayhem? You can't go here. I saw a map of the U.S. Prior to like 1600s, and it was four different pictures. It showed that, hey, look, almost the whole U.S. it was shaded where they had Indian inhabitants all over. Then it went to like the 1800s. Then it was pretty much about 35% of the country, 65% of the country had Indian settlements and inhabitants. Then about the early 1900s, that number had, that this map got shaded, even the shader, the map got even whiter because it went from gray to whiter, and it was more like maybe like 20%. Now, if you look at the map now, there's something like maybe like less than 10% of the whole U.S. has got areas of Indian settlements. That should tell you something, because to this day, you can't go ahead and find really two Indians unless you go ahead and find some people from East India, not in America.
Yeah,
that
it
is
was,
something that we can't go ahead and let get by, because we can't go ahead. How could you go ahead and still call yourself a proud American knowing that part of the history?
Right, there was a Homestead Act of 1860. That was right around the time, or right before the time of Civil War, and they told the white folks in the other part of the country to go west and just go out there and take the land for free. You can get you can get 160 acres and call that your land, and then the government will go out there and protect you from the Indians.
Mm-hmm.
So, white folks, that's how places like Montana and Idaho and all those places got populated. It wasn't like they were going out there to do some business. They were just giving out 160 acres of free land. Go out there and get it, and that's your land. And, a lot of these places got filled up with whites, and when Indians lived on the land, they would just bring in the guns and kill them.
Right.
And
it was
a mass slaughter.
The U.S. sponsored a lot of families, people just off the street coming out of Europe. You want to get land? Hey,
yeah.
We'll go ahead and pay for you coming to the U.S. And you can just go ahead and take you and stick and some rope and rope it off, and that's yours. That's why if you go ahead, you travel through what they call the heartland. You're like the middle of America, middle America. You'll see a whole lot of these Scandinavian names. You see a whole lot of them types of names going through there. And that was shocking. Let me play this for you, and this feeds into this, that they didn't stop doing that. They did this stuff for years. This is Martin Luther King. I wonder if you heard, think about this.
At the very same time that America refused to give the Negro any land, through an act of Congress, our government was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest. which meant that it was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor. But not only did they give the land, they built land-grant colleges with government money to teach them how to farm. Not only that, they provided county agents to further their expertise in farming. Not only that, they provided low interest rates in order that they could mechanize their farms. Not only that, today many of these people are receiving millions of dollars in federal subsidies not to farm, and they are the very people telling the black man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. Now, this is what we are faced with, and this is the reality. Now, when we come to Washington in this campaign, we are coming to get our check.
Now, see, brother, you know, that, back, you ain't gonna have, I have heard none of these so-called black leaders go ahead and repeat any of the stuff that he talking about in that clip. And he said that the U.S. got white peasants, people off the street, scum, and criminals, brought them over here, gave them land, taught them how to work the land. Gave him money, gave him equipment, and just let him go to work. Let him do what they want to. Gave him the education and training to go ahead and work the land. And he was mentioning that back then in the 60s. But then you go ahead and you go ahead even further than that. But that was one of the biggest things that they did in with the Indian Wars. That's what the Indian Wars was all about. It wasn't because they portrayed the Indian as being a savage and they just hate white people. But they never tell the real story about why these people were fighting to go hit fighting the white man. That term Indian giver, when I looked that up, I was kind of shocked to go ahead and see it. But after a while, the shock wore off and I began to understand. The term Indian giver was given to the Indians because the Indians had gave these Europeans gifts and helped and taught them and done stuff for them. When the Indians turned around and saw how brutal and horrible and nasty and terrible these people were, they wanted their shit back. So the term Indian giver was put out there to go ahead and mean something negative, or you give me something, now you want it back. We want it back because you were not who you say you were. And that's the part that's missing with that term Indian giver.
Yeah. Yeah, what Dr. King was saying was that was like right on the money, because that act did not end until 1976. You and I were both alive in 76. That
mm-hmm.
act was still around, and people were still getting land in Alaska for free.
Right.
You know, but...
But again, he said these are the same people that are telling the black man that they should lift themselves up that they bootstraps when they had help from the U.S. government, when they had the backing from the U.S. government. Now they're telling us we need to lift ourselves up by our bootstraps. What country is backing us? See, this is another again. How can you call yourself a proud American when you ain't got a proud black American when you ain't got none of that shit backing you?
Yeah, I had the same conversation with some so-called black conservatives earlier this week. And they had the same response, was, well, we need to pull ourselves up by our bootstraps. We shouldn't be looking for the government to do anything. And it wasn't even my purpose to say that the government need to give us something. Although
how can you pull yourself up by your bootstraps when you even got boots?
There you go. But it is that whole rhetoric is so ingrained in their response to, as you give them the facts, they just give you back a, you know, pre-message. It was already, please help my bootstraps. Oh, don't look to the government. And it's like you're trying to explain to the so-called conservative that the same policies didn't apply to white folks. You didn't say to white folks of Europe, oh, you need to pull yourself by your bootstraps. You didn't say to them that you need to, pull yourself out of the bootstrap. You said to them, go out and get some free land here. You give some money. Here's some money. Do this. That. But the same people will be in a so-called red states today, and they will be in these states, and they will say, let's shut down the government because people need to pull themselves up by their bootstraps. But their forefathers, their grandparents, got that land that they lived on for free.
Exactly. And you can't explain that to them because they want to go ahead and distort it or go ahead and bring up something else and all this other old lies. They want to go ahead and distort and rearrange the truth and the facts. And, you know, they got the whole thing down pat, and they've been repeating that garbage for years. Well, you know, it's like this. So I can't remember some of the crap because it's been so much stuff. It's just. It just brings me to this point where I need to stop listening to these fucking people because they're full of shit, and stop going ahead trying to make them relevant part of the bigger picture. I just really want when I hear one of these people go ahead and say some stuff like, "Well, you can't blame me for slavery." Yes, I can. I can because you're benefiting from that shit as we speak.
Exactly.
You got privileges, you know, right now as we speak because of slavery. So, you know, it's amazing when you go here and you try to bring them and present facts. They don't want to hear facts. They don't want to listen to none of that. They want to go ahead and tell you that, hey, look, you need to do something for yourself. And then when you go here and you tell them, hey, look, well, let's separate. Yeah, let me get that. Let me play that one for you real quick. Because that's something that Malcolm X was saying. No, you know, let's separate. Yeah, you can take a quick break, brother.
All right, go ahead.
There was two kinds of slaves. There was the house Negro and the field Negro. The house Negro, they lived in the house with master. They dressed pretty good. They ate good because they ate his food. But he left. They lived in the attic or the basement, but still they lived near their master. And they loved their master more than the master loved himself. They would give their life to save their master's house quicker than the master would. The house Negro, the master said, we got a good house here. The house Negro said, yeah, we got a good house here. Whenever the master said we, he said we. That's how you can tell a house Negro. If the master's house caught on fire, the house Negro would fight harder to put the blaze out than the master would. If the master got sick, the house Negro would say, what's the matter, boss? We sick. We sick. He identified himself with his master more than his master identified with himself. And if you came to the house Negro and said, let's run away, let's escape, let's separate, the house Negro would look at you and say, man, you crazy. What you mean separate? Where is there a better house than this? Where can I wear better clothes than this? Where can I eat better food than this? That was that house Negro. In those days, he was called a house nigger. And that's what we call him today because we still got some house niggers running around here. This modern house Negro loves his master. He wants to live near him. He'll pay three times as much as the house is worth just to live near his master. And then brag about, I'm the only Negro out here. I'm the only one on my job. I'm the only one in this school. You're nothing but a house Negro. And if someone come to you right now and say, let's separate, you say the same thing that the house Negro said on the plantation. What you mean, separate? From America? This good white man? Where you gonna get a better job than you get here? I mean, this is what you say. I ain't left nothing in Africa. That's what you say. Why, you left your mind in Africa.
field, then there was Negroes in the house. The Negro in the field caught hell. He ate leftovers. In the house, they ate high up on the hog. The Negro in the field didn't get nothing but what was left of the insides of the hog. They call them Shetlands nowadays. In those days, they call them what they were, guts. That's what you were, a gut eater. And some of you are still gut eaters. The field Negro was beaten from morning till night. He lived in a shack, in a hut. He wore cast-off clothes. And he hated his master. I say he hated his master. He was intelligent. That house Negro loved his master. But that field Negro, remember, they were in the majority. And they hated the master. When the house caught on fire, he didn't try and put it out. That field Negro prayed for a wind, for a breeze. When the master got sick, the field Negro prayed that he died. If someone come to the field Negro and said, let's separate, let's run, he didn't say, where are we going? He said, any place is better than here. You got field Negroes in America today. I'm a field Negro. Masters are the field Negroes. When they see this man's house on fire, you don't hear these little Negroes talking about our government is in trouble. They say the government is in trouble. Imagine a Negro, our government. I even heard one say our astronauts. They won't even let him near the plant. And our astronauts. That's a Negro that's out of his mind. That's a Negro that's out of his mind. Just as the slave master in that day.
No, I've often said that thank God for slavery because, you know, had not, then the blacks who were here would have been stuck in Africa. And you see how bad Africa, everybody and mama trying to get out of Africa and come to America. And so God has a way of looking out for folks, and he made it possible by way of slavery to get black folks into this country. But 100% American. Proud of it. I thank God that he saw fit for me to get here. Never mind that, you know, we were sold. I mean, my ancestors way back, way yonder when, were sold by Arabs and blacks to white folks and got us here. The white man came and brought us to the greatest country in the world. The ride over was pretty tough. But, you know, it's like riding on a crowded airplane and when you're not in first class. It's a tough ride. But you're happy when you get to your destination. And so the ride was tough over here. The pain for freedom was tough, you know, because in life, if you want to gain something, you got to lose something. No pain, no gain. So it was a tough. The pain was tough, all for the sake of freedom. So I thank God that he got me here, and to show my appreciation to the blacks who suffer as a result of coming here, and the Arabs and blacks who sold us to the white man for going there and getting us and bringing us here, I want to say thanks.
Oh, my goodness, brother.
Yeah.
You know, that, you know, sometimes, man, you know, that gets it. See, this is what I'm saying. What do we have to be proud of? That was a coon alert that went off. And he's calling the white man the savior. He these at the price and for the pain for freedom. And you know to go ahead and get this, you got to lose something, you got to gain something. I don't see what we gained. I just see just total losses by going ahead still messing with these folks in their system. You agree?
Yeah, I agree. I think Jesse Lee Peterson is not very bright. I think it's obvious when you hear him. I mean, I think there's usually I talk to black conservatives every so often. Maybe once every other week I have a conversation with a group of black conservatives. And from what I can gather, there's usually like three types of black conservatives. There's the greed is good, 1980s Ronald Reagan type, black Republican. That it would be like Larry Elder and Charles Payne and Herman Cain, the type of Wall Street guys or investment guys. And then you have the religious right, the white Christian racist conservatives is my friend. That's Jesse Lee Peterson and probably a few others that are really into the conservative movement religiously. And you have the third group is like, I hate blacks because I have, a bad childhood experience. That's more like the Clarence Thomas or Ward Connerly. Black people just hate black people. And the first and last group, the greed is good, and the Ward Connerly, Clarence Thomas type, they're usually educated and smart. They're misguided. The religious right, I like white racist, Christian people, like Jesse Lee Peterson and probably a few others, they're very, very dumb. I mean, they're way below.
Let me add to that real quick. I want you to continue.
Right.
But, the ones who go here and say, I like white people and the Christian types, these are the ones that constantly try to tell you, we're all brothers, we're all sisters, and all that bullshit.
Yeah.
Those are the ones that are even more dangerous because they go ahead and want to get you to slide in and get white people to be in charge of your shit.
Yeah, exactly. I think those brothers especially, there's no way you can work with those brothers. I really couldn't trust those dudes because you sit there and talk to them and you can tell them all the facts in the world, but they're just focused on, the white man is my... That's my friend. The white man is, they can't see past that they have this religion with them, and that because they say they share the same religion, then we have to be on the same page with them. And
not realizing that they use that book, that religion, to enslave them.
And they don't even follow it anyway. So obviously, go by scriptures or go by history. You can just sit there and have a conversation with it. They could acknowledge, yeah, they don't follow it, but they weren't, quote, real Christians. But these white people that I know, they're the real ones. They might be able to see, oh yeah, they did this in the past, but these people over here, no, they're not like that.
Yeah,
and it's like they're the same people, man.
That thing about privilege and what they instilled in place, which means that they're privileged. I remember when there was a guy I was talking to one of these block shows, and there was a black guy on there. He sounded like the Larry Eldridge type, but he had a white co-host, and the white co-host was talking about how his family owned slaves, and he was like, you people need to do this, and you people, just pull yourself by your bootstraps. My question to him was, why do whites need to have slaves anyway, if you're so hardworking and everything? That shut him up. Yeah. They go ahead, and they muted my line and kicked me off their show.
That's how they do, man. As soon as you come on there and you start challenging with someone, because first of all, they think that most black people are just going to get on the air and say, you know what I'm saying, and they don't have no conversation. They think that most black people are like those characters they put on TV, like or the news, and interviewers like, oh, well, that's how they think black people are. So when they see a black person who is not stupid, who is not buffoonery, they would assume, oh, he must be a conservative. Oh, he's not a conservative. I don't want to talk to him. Hang up.
Want to get those ones who can't articulate their point and go ahead and stress their point or go ahead and give examples to go ahead and to build that point and to show how. Okay, like if I go ahead and I tell you how to make a cake, I can go ahead and run it through you step by step and show you what's going on, how it's look, you know, and you can get a former picture in your mind. But you got these fuckers that they like to go ahead and parade around and go ahead and just say, hey, look, you just get some flour and just throw it in and throw some water on it. And they don't want to fuck with nobody like me. They'd rather deal with them kind of idiots.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's how they do it. Like, a lot of these, you know, the white conservatives, they do the same thing, man. They'll get the worst person on there to defend the point. Because they want to appear like the opposition don't know what the heck they're talking about.
Right, right, yeah. Every once I was watching Fox News one day. I can't remember who these people were, but this was stuck in my mind about this show, that particular episode or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
It was talking about race. And, you know, of course, it was most of the commentators on Fox, the anchor people or whatever, they were white. And they had a black guy who was going ahead and talking about race and how things are in America. But they had this white dude, this fat bigot. And I'm going to say that and I'm going to show you. The white dude couldn't go ahead and shut the black guy down. Okay, because the black guy kept going ahead and hitting him with these points about things in history and what's going on and blah, blah, blah. You know, giving facts. You know what the white dude said? The white dude told the host, turn off this boy's mic. We don't need to hear that. It's like, what the
oh,
fuck?
My
goodness. Turned it, yeah, and then he said again, this boy don't need to say nothing. Jeez. And I was like, wow. Man, that stuck out of my head. I was like, man, I didn't remember who these people were, but I just kept seeing that, and it just feeds into the whole persona about Fox and the whole aura, how much they the vibes that they give off. That hey, look, we're a bunch of bigots, and we don't give a damn if you don't like it. And we got a bunch of house niggas work over here, so don't criticize them. We're gonna try to attack you and tear you down. Keith Olbermann had his spot on MSNBC. I really feel that the reason they took Keith Olbermann off, white dude that was really, really making a lot of good points, because all this media stuff is connected. There's really no independent. It's MSNBC and Fox and CNN. Still, all of the bigwigs all sit in one room. And they made a strong point that they didn't like Keith Olbermann. Even people at MSNBC, he rubbed them wrong. So it had to get him off because he was hitting them with a lot of stuff. But I noticed something else. You know, you got Al Sharpton got a show talking about black people's issues and problems. You got Rich talking about black people's issues and problems. But you don't have, I don't think we'll ever see any black folks that will go ahead and you know, just like the conversation you and I have, I don't think you'll ever see anybody on one of these stations that's dealing with that. They got their tokens that they always put out, and they try to go ahead and pretend that they for black folks, but they're not. Because even when I go ahead and watch Melissa Harris Perry show on MSNBC, it's she won't go there. If you listen to her, she really won't go there. She touch and she, it's like, you know, she get close, she's at the shore. You know, she came to the ocean, and she gonna go ahead and maybe put her foot in the water, but she ain't gonna go jump in it full steam. And I have not seen that one of them go ahead and do that. They all got their tokens. They all got their bootlickers. Even Roland Martin, as much, you know, he's full of shit. Okay, he won't go there because they all profiting off this shit. And I really they need to be really called out on a lot of their bullshit. We don't have a strong black media. We don't have nobody really go ahead and tell it how it was. At one time, you kind of had BET, but they got shut down, and they got shut down because dude never really was into it. He was into making money. Bob Johnson was really into making money. And another guy reinforced that last night. You know, he didn't. I heard this brother last night talk. I think it was last night or two nights ago. He was talking about how, you know, we had BET, but Bob Johnson really wanted to make money. That's why he sold BET and sold it to the guy who owns CNN. He sold it out. Cannon or whatever. Ted Turner. He sold it to Ted Turner, which in turn, Ted Turner sold it to another white group.
Yeah, Viacom.
And it was just the basically story. That's why you don't see that same format you have on BET, because they was talking about the news from a black perspective and talking about stuff that was going on in the community and things like that. We don't have that. You can't even go here and rely on the black radio stations, because the majority of them are owned by Clear Channel. Clear Channel is I had a photo of all the board of directors for Clear Channel. All of them white. All of them are from the South, mostly from Texas. And all of them heavily Christian so-and-sos. So there are no way possible you're going to go ahead and get something fair come out of the black radio stations. I'm not a big Steve Harvey fan. I think Steve Harvey means a lot, black folks a lot of harm, more harm than good.
Yeah, I can't really point to anybody I see on media that really represents, you know, really from a black perspective. But I believe that Shirzad Ali occasionally appears on CNN headline news. Some show other, is it Dr. No, that's a, not Dr. Phil. What's it's one of those, Dr. Drew. Dr. Drew had her on a couple of times on his show, and she brings it 100%. But I think that what the way they present her is, here's the crazy black woman with her, the Queen Latifah type hat that she wears, and she'd go there. So they kind of use her as like, this is what crazy black people sound like. I think that's how they present her. Although when if you and I were listening to her, she's right on the money. But they're presenting her as she can't be serious, or this is such an anomaly. And they keep her, she comes on every once in a while. But I don't know many people that watch the Dr. Drew show on the headline news. It's not as if, you know, on MSNBC where their analysis people are on there like a couple times a week. You see them all the time.
Right.
And Shirzad Ali, she's there every once in a while. But she'll bring it. She talks about white supremacy and the white supremacy power structure. I mean, you know, everything that you hear from a Neely Fuller or from a Chris's Welding or something, she is 100% with it. And I heard one guy one time on the Melissa and Harry Perry show one time talk about white supremacy. I haven't seen him since.
Oh no, you're not. Ain't no way you can go ahead and bring some of that back to go ahead and stir up white folks to make them mad. You know, and that's what it is. And the black people that go ahead and frequent these shows, because because when I first really heard Melissa Harris Perry, I was like, this sister, what is she on? But then as I really pay attention to it, I noticed that she would not go ahead and put a foot in that. She wouldn't go ahead and she'd get to the edge, touch the water. But she wouldn't go ahead and be like, hey, I'm getting in this pool. I'm going to get into this ocean. I'm going to get into this lake. I'm going to get in there and get wet and dirty and everything. She ain't going to do that. Because there's many times she's about defending other people that mean us so much harm. And then she comes up with, and if you listen to her, she gives that attitude where it's like, well, we got to go ahead and forgive and forget shit. Man, I hate when I hear that kind of attitude, you know. Love those people who love you. Man, when the fuck you going to wake up? They beating your ass and killing you, and you just supposed to keep on loving them? Somebody stabbing you in the chest and be like, you know, I love you, and make them stop. No, if I go ahead and I see it coming, I'm going to get you. And if you go ahead and you get one in on me, don't believe I'm trying to whoop your ass. She ain't that Nat Turner type, that Harriet Tubman type.
I think most of the women they put in the media, like black women they put on these shows, and most of them, if not all of them, they're all married to white dudes.
You know what? But she's not.
No. I know she's married to her brother, but she is half white. She herself half white. I believe her mom. If it's not her mom, it could be her grandma. Maybe she's a quarter.
No, her mother is.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
She done her so-called shows on race, and I was like, man, she ain't really going there.
No, because like how deep can you go on race if your mom is white?
Right.
You know that's not you're not gonna bring it. You're just gonna get up there instead of hitting a home run. You're gonna take a walk or you're gonna hit a bunt. You're not really gonna get a grand slam going on here. You're not really gonna bring it home. And that's how they know. It's like there's another so-called black. She half black, Karen Finley or something. That they have her. She has a show called Disrupt or something like that. That's
Karen Finley.
Married. Yeah, she's married to a white dude. Solo.
Oh yeah.
Solo Dad of Brian. Yeah, she's married to a white, you know, white dude.
Dang.
Solo Dad O'Brien. Her and her white kids with her white man. You know, they got her off of CNN. Now, first thing I seen her, she popped up on MSNBC as a guest. So I guess she's going to get her own show somewhere. But that's who they use. They use these either half black, half white, married to white dudes to represent this is what black America stands for. Or they get the male who's a homosexual. He's a flamboyant homosexual dude or something.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Woo,
yeah.
I'm glad you went there, because that's something else I noticed. And MSNBC is real good for going ahead and getting praying out all these homosexual males.
Exactly.
Come on, now I can't really respect these cats, because they didn't gave up on the struggle. And the ones they got, these homosexual brothers that they got there, are with white dudes.
I bet you're right, dude. I never looked into that.
They were white dudes, because there's one little dude that got one with the glasses. What? I don't remember his name.
Jonathan Capehart, ain't that him? The little
Jonathan. They just showed him going to these events and all this other stuff, and he was talking about, look, I went with my partner, and so he went a white dude.
Yeah.
Grew up in a black neighborhood, told about his story and what he was going through in the neighborhood, and lived in a mixed neighborhood, and he had to fight to go in and get in and out of school and walking in and being harassed, you know, being called nigger. And now he went one.
Exactly. That's how they do us, man. That's how they do us. That's who they have on this media, whether it be conservative or liberal. That's how they put us on the media. They don't really have us on here.
Honestly, Herman Cain, I think, was one of the only black conservatives I saw with a black wife.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
One of the
either
only
male or female.
Right.
Most of those female conservatives got white dudes too.
Because let me see. What was that? The one sister, she was interviewing that guy who wrote the book about Islam, and the dude just shut her ass down. You know, he just shut her down. She was just basically repeating all the shit that she heard in her ear, and he was shutting her down. And he made it look like a fool. Man, I wish I had that clip. I wish I could remember some more. But it was just the thing. Here's the thing: her man is white. And she was coming at this dude about his writing a book about Christianity, and he's a Muslim. And she kept trying to go ahead and get him to say stuff. Well, how can you go ahead and write something about that? You know, trying to tell him that he don't know. But she was basically going ahead and repeating all the garbage in the head. My point is this: I know they got to go ahead and they got the producer, somebody tell them to do such and such, so and so. But at what point do they go ahead and just pull that earpiece out their head and say, hey, look, this shit ain't real. That ain't really happening. This is what's going on. Is the money really clouded them, their thought and their thinking process to where they got to go ahead and keep on supporting lies when they know it ain't true? And that you see it first. You see it when you watch these black commentators. That's what Melissa Harris. And I couldn't figure out, you know, she, and like I said, she get close to the water's edge, but she don't put her foot in it.
I think that they would, they have to pass the litmus test ahead of time, almost like a casting couch type thing. That before they get on there, they have to, you know, display their loyalty to this white agenda, and then once you get your, you show your, or display your loyalty on camera and off camera, then they'll let you on camera. Because these people had these, you know, why would Jonathan Capehart represent what black folks are thinking or saying, or black men? There has to be something going on that he did something, or there's a reason why he's on there. It's not... He took somebody off for what? I don't know what he did.
You know, and then he got his white boyfriend. Yeah. Oh my goodness, that's nasty, man.
That's white folks, man.
That's a bad visual, man.
Ugh. It's Hollywood all the time, man. I remember, you know, back in my day, it was they used to have the Hollywood teenager shows that are. It was a Corey Helms and Corey Feldman, and it's like they were starring these. It was white dudes. They were starring these films in Hollywood. Well, later on, you know, one of them committed suicide, and the other one was a dope, you know, dope fiend. And it was revealed, oh yeah, when we were 12 and 13, we had the casting couch. They had all these people sleeping with us and such. That came out like way later, and they was doing that to little boys in Hollywood. Now Hollywood Hollywood and the news, it's pretty much the same. Same people run Hollywood, run the news.
Right.
And they're doing the same thing. You think that Jonathan Capehart is on there without a casting couch? Or Melissa Harris Perry? Or I don't know, but, you know, what she did. I'm not going to choose her or something. But Saldana Bryan and Karen Feeney, you don't think these people doing something with white folks to get on TV?
I would think they are, because they are not pushing no real serious message.
No.
They're pushing an agenda that go ahead that's real harmful to us.
Exactly.
And they seem to be damn proud of it. And Karen Finney, she got a show too. As a matter of fact, her show might be on right now. But she do the same shit.
Yep.
And they know firsthand. And see, here's something else. When you in the media, you getting feeds and people sending you tips and stuff about what's going on literally all over the planet. And if you ever really pay attention, I mean, I know you see it, but you see they have the different monitors. Their monitors ain't like for the people that's like right down that street. Their monitors are going, that's global, international. So they got the local section, they got the county, the state. You know, going up to the next countries, and then they got it going global in different countries, and they listen to the news, different news feeds from other people, and then people giving them tips and stuff. So they know firsthand about a lot of stuff that's going on. When once I was talking to a local news anchor, and I was trying to go ahead and describe a story to him, and dude just basically told me, he said, look, that's not going to run. You know, my producer's not even going to go ahead and look at that. And I see it, and you guys, as you go ahead and you look at the news, and you go ahead and see that they're not going to go ahead and put out real, it's sensationalism, okay, that make black folks look bad a lot of times. They got to put them stories out, and they go ahead and make white folks victims. They really put a lot of them stories out. I noticed that. Oh, this poor white man who had, like the dude who turned blue, the white dude turned blue. Well, hey, look, I know niggas that turned blue, and they ain't saying shit about it.
Yeah.
The dude who turned blue died this week. Okay, all the problems that we got, we don't go ahead and see them, you know, highlighting them problems. Okay, and here's something else. In Chicago, I mean, like, you know, this is again, There's so many goddamn murders around here, and they're not dealing with the root of the problem. The mayor and chief of police is all pissed off because there's the hints of sending the National Guard to Chicago. Well, that's really not going to help. You know, that's only going to make the whole problem worse. You know, people already living in somewhat of a prison state, but it's sort of like in Chicago and a lot of areas, it's sort of like these areas are like on islands, but all the it's like a prison island, and all the individuals got weapons. You know, like you've seen one of the kind of movies where they're isolated and everybody. That's what it's like in a lot of these areas.
Yeah.
The only thing they try to do is prey on other poor folks. And they seem to justify the police and the mayor justifying their existence, their job. But now it's talking about put more cops on the streets and, oh, no, we don't need the National Guard, but we do need the National Guard. I just see it like this. You throw in all that money. We buy more bullets versus books. But also, they closed about 50-something schools over here in Chicago. But then again, they also put money, like $100 million, into building a sports stadium for DePaul University.
Hey.
So you got to look at their priorities. Black folks ain't their priorities. Minorities ain't their priorities. But white folks and building, I think, another dorm for international students.
Yes.
So, you know, this again, you know, what is it you got to be proud of to be a black American? You know, we can go on about different stories, but I just don't see how we continue to go ahead and say I'm proud to be a black American. I just can't do that.
Yeah, man, I think that, you know, we got to search long and hard, man, and try to find something to be proud of in the history dealing with white folks or what white folks represent. I think if one called himself proud black American, it could only make sense if it symbolizes your continued resistance to white supremacy as a black man in America. That part I can see, but not, you know, you're proud of the founding fathers and all that stuff that it represents, because that has really nothing to do with it.
I wanted to bring up this thing about that founding fathers thing here. And when I address these conservatives, you go here, these black conservatives, and the clip wouldn't play. That piece that Dr. Claude Anderson is saying, at what point in history do blacks have something that they want to conserve? What part of history do they want to go back to? Well, slavery, yeah. Jim Crow, civil rights movement, lynchings? At what point in history do you want to go ahead and conserve? Do you want to go back to? So, you know, it's real strange. You can't, when you go ahead and you corral them, you try to go ahead and tell them about this, they want to go ahead and deny those things. Also, in this country, man, I think they're still doing it. I don't know what state, but they've been sterilizing black folks, and they had. I think the most recent one was stopped in 2005. What was that, North Carolina?
They had a program in North, sterilizing
women over there that were in prison, and I think also in California they did that.
Yeah, that was last year.
Last year.
That was last year.
Oh, my goodness. I got that. I think I had my information messed up. That was last year?
I know I heard the story last year, and it was something that was going on. If it was I know it was reported last year. If it happened a few years before that, I don't know. But I know that was a story that was, you know, making some waves, and it was last year people were talking about that.
Where are these so-called black leaders and going ahead and saying that, hey, look, just like Malcolm X was saying, that we need to separate. Another reason we need to separate, because a lot of times if you go ahead and you look at the docket, you look at these court cases, you go ahead and be like, got arrested for such and such. They gave a lengthy prison system. That's what. And we want to go ahead and keep you to spend time in prison because it makes them money. Did you look at that little piece, man, I sent you on the convict lease?
Yeah, I saw that about the but the prisoners and doing the working, is that the one?
Where what they did was they in the South, right?
Yeah.
This was a system that was a penal labor practice in the Southern United States, beginning with the emancipation of slaves in the Civil War, and it peaked in 1880. Around 1880, when the officials ending in with the last state in Alabama in 1923. Really, to me, that system kind of never stopped. They just revamped it and changed around. What they was doing was, you know, it was guys dying, because they had a big documentary about this a little while ago. They were going ahead picking up guys and say they were loitering. Okay, so they wouldn't go ahead and, if you were loitering, vagrancy, well, loitering. They would go ahead and say, well, hey, look, that's a huge fine. Knowing that these guys, nice guys, didn't have jobs. I mean, well, the cops just told them to go ahead and push on. But what they did was they locked guys up. First off, your sentence was like 6 months. And if you couldn't pay the fine at the end of that 6 months, they extended your stay. Okay?
Yeah.
So then they would go ahead and tack on another few months. They had so many guys that they were pulling off the street, you know, just walking down the street, saying that they were loitering, just walking down the street, or individuals waiting for a ride or waiting for the train. Okay? They did a lot of guys like that. Then there were some guys, this was in this documentary, I was trying to pull that up, and they had some guys that that they said that they had committed a crime, somebody seen them commit a crime, and they went to their house and arrested them. And the people who benefited off this, that's one reason I mentioned earlier about white privilege. The Tennessee Steel, the steel companies, the iron companies, and the railroad, they benefited off that labor. They had guys who had plantations who went to people's houses and pulled people off, even with the sheriff. And hey, look, that blackie there, he committed a crime, and I want him to go ahead and work on my plantation. I saw another story where, hey, look, this one lady came out and said what her grandfather had done was go to somebody's house, and the guys who didn't want to work, the guys who didn't want to work, what they did to them was they corralled them up, put them in the back of a truck, and took them down to like a river, and they just massacred them, shot them all. And it was about 13 guys they shot into the river, shot and just let their bodies float through the river.
I think back in those 1800s, man, it was they were trying to find a way to get around not having slaves anymore, and that was, you know, just white folks up to no good. That was like when it was coming up with Jim Crow, it was probably like a replacement for a lot of that stuff, where they didn't even need, you know, no underhanded ways of instituting, you know, white supremacy and reinstituting slavery. We just used Jim Crow and a number of other things that they used.
Let me read this to you. Convict leasing in the United States began during the Reconstruction period, 1865 to 1877. After the end of the Civil War, farmers and businessmen needed to find replacement for that labor force. You know, these guys have been slaved. Once the slaves had been freed, you know, some Southern legislatures passed black codes to restrict the movement of blacks and force them into employment with whites. If convicted of vagrancy, blacks were could be put in prison, and they also received sentences for petty crimes. State began to lease convict labor to the plantations and other facilities seeking labor, as the free men were trying to withdraw and work for themselves. This provided the states with a new source of revenue during the years when they were financially strapped, and lessers the benefits by the use of the forced labor at below market rates. One of the things that helped stop this when I saw that documentary was what they had did was every now and then they would snatch up some white folks. Okay?
Yeah.
And they snatched up this one white dude, right, and worked him to death. Well, what they did was he was like, hey, I didn't do nothing. And pretty much he got a whooping, and he died from his injuries after a few days. And when his family came to look for him, some of the blacks had told him what happened. That was the kind of like they started beginning to change that and started lighting up on it because the FBI got involved. But at that point, it had went on for a number of years, and then like hundreds, thousands of blacks had been killed, and they wouldn't say nothing. But when that one particular white dude, his family had connections, they snatched him off the street. And I think his family had connections, but his family pissed off one of the local sheriffs or something like that, so they enslaved him and threw them with the Negroes, and then he died. That got the U.S. government involved. Just like right now. I don't think enough, this is how I see it. It sounds cruel, but it's the truth. I don't think enough blacks have died in Chicago in order for them to really get involved. In order for, you know, in order for them to go ahead and stop this mass amount of killing. I don't think so. It has to be some more black people than died there, some of them whites being affected a little bit more. That's where I see it, bro.
Yeah, that's something we gotta explore that in another show, man. Like, what can actually be done to try to affect, you know, Chicago, you know,
right,
the mayor, or the president, or wherever it's gonna come from, like, or the community, like, what can be done? Because I looked at that and it's like, man, I don't know enough about the details to actually, you know, propose something, and or say this, you know, or who to blame for such and such. So that's something we gotta delve into, man, because I don't know much about it.
Yeah, we'll talk, brother, because I'm coming up on the end of my show. It's been a great conversation with you, brother.
Yeah, you too, brother.
And you got any final thoughts, any last words before we go ahead and take us out with something interesting?
Yeah, I just want everybody listening, man, have a good week and stay productive. That's it, brother.
That's cool. How about some Blackstreet?
Yeah, go ahead, bro.
Coming to you.
All right, brother. Peace.
All right, peace.
Taking to the bridge.
Sometimes I get the feeling that I wanna get with you and let my love come down the way I know you want it to. Smooth and gentle, or maybe in the pouring rain, lick you up and down and make you call my name. I like the way you work it.
Baby, work it out.
Girl, you turn me on.
tingle jangle. Loves it when it's tight like a strangle. Gives it up from every angle. I love it when she goes to work until her shoulders hurt. And when she goes to work, it makes me go berserk. It's up and down, it's up and down with the master. I like it to assert. She likes to do it. I kinda figured that. No time for the chitter chat. Now tell the brother where to hit it at. So lay your body down with Dr. Duke right. Nothing was too tight. Gotta get you open like a school. So keep it going, baby girl. It's your world, I'm just a squirrel trying to get a nut, brother. I like to do what you do when you do. You make me wanna shoot. Work it out, baby boo.
My girl a superstar, all from a home movie. Bow on our arrival, the honor. American idols. When niggas in pairs, got them hanging off the Eiffel. Yeah, I'm talking business. We talking CIA. I'm talking George Tenet. I seen him the other day. He asked me about my Maybach. Think he had the same. Except my tenant and his might have been rented. You know white people get money, don't spend it. Or maybe they get money by business. I'd rather buy 80 gold chains and go ignorant. I know Spike Lee gon' kill me, but let me finish. Blaming on a pigment. We live in no limits. Them gold masterpiece ceilings was just a figment of our imagination. MTV Cribs, now I'm looking at a crib right next to where Tiki lives. That's Tom Cruise. Whatever she accused, he wasn't really drunk. He just had fruit bruise. Pass the refreshments, a cool, cool beverage. Everything I do need a news crew's presence. See both swerve, homie, watch out for the waves. I'm way too black to burn from sun rays. So I just meditated the home in Pompeii about how I could build a new Rome in one day. Every time I'm in Vegas, she's screaming like he's Elvis. But I just want to design hotels and nail it. Shit is real, got me feeling Israelian like Bar Raffaella Giselle. No, that's Brazilian. Went through deep depression when my mama passed. Suicide, what kind of talk is that? But I've been talking to God for so long. Now as you look at my life, I guess he's talking back, fucking with my clique. Ain't nobody fresher than my motherfucking clique.